The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of Punt Intended, a fantasy NBA dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Rhett Bauer, joined by my co-host, Travis Fuller.
How's it going, Rhett? We got some beautiful fall Midwest weather here today. So you know what that means. Basketball is on the horizon.
We are hours away from basketball right now, and it could not be more exciting. Before we get started, please make sure you give us a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts so we can get up to that 35 number, which is the magic number for another mailbag, which a lot of you have been asking about. So my first question back is, have you done a rating and review? And if the answer is no, it's like, well, then there you go. That's the next thing you need to do to get a mailbag going. We are here today to talk about the Chicago Bulls. And joining us to talk about the Chicago Bulls is nobody, because we can both talk about the Chicago Bulls pretty well. And we could not find a guest that was able to make it into their schedule. So Travis Fuller is here to talk to me about the Chicago Bulls.
That's right. The 4-0 Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, exactly. Chicago Sky just won the WNBA Finals. And it's crazy that Chicago Bulls and Chicago Sky are going to be champions in the same year.
I hope so. I got a futures bet dependent on it. So we'll see. But it's exciting. I mean, the Bulls, in my opinion, had the best offseason out of any team. And that's not my bias coming into play here. I legitimately think the players that they went out and signed and brought in, along with LaVine being there in the Vooch trade last year, they all really complement each other well. And I think the end goal with all these players is the same. They have a lot of guys that just want to win. They don't care about their stats. They just want to win ball games and win a championship. And I think this team is really starting to gel well early on in the season, which is pretty exciting for us Bulls fans.
I was not as much of a fan of the DeMar DeRozan trade. I loved the Lonzo signing. We thought that was going to happen at the trade deadline last year. We're honestly quite upset that the Bulls didn't pull it off, just because we wanted to see Vooch and Lonzo and LaVine closed the season out with those extra 15, 20 games, whatever it is, but that didn't happen. So instead they had a massive summer, and Lonzo was apparently tampering, because that was done within seconds of free agency opening. So
absolutely. Some tampering going on there, but as is the case for most of those early signs.
Yeah. You're telling me you didn't quite get the conditions done in 2 minutes. That's crazy. So Lonzo loved it. And then we started hearing about DeRozan, and the DeRozan trade as a whole, they didn't give up anything. But the money that they gave him, I was a little bit nervous about, just because he has limitations as a player, even though he does bring something to this Bulls roster that hopefully can push them deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, the defensive limitations are the obvious with DeRozan. But we really need playmaking on this team. Last year, for those of you that watched the games, it was basically in the fourth quarter, it was give the ball to Zach LaVine and hope he can score. And that was pretty much our offense to close out games. So having DeRozan there is really going to take a ton of pressure off LaVine to try and close out games. And he's just added another playmaker to this team, Lonzo. I hope they give Lonzo the point guard duties, but we've seen what Lonzo can do with his improved shooting. And you're just going to have a bunch of guys that can handle the ball and shoot as well. So I like the DeRozan signing. I think we have enough good athletes on this team and guys that can step up and play defense off the bench to kind of hide any of DeRozan's inefficiencies on the defensive end.
That's one thing that we really liked about their offseason was the Lauri Markkanen trade, because getting a first for a guy that you weren't keeping that had absolutely no place on this roster once they got all of the guys that they got, but then also getting a guy like Derrick Jones Jr., who does fit in nicely with this rotation as just an absolute athlete to go out there and wreak havoc. He may not be the best like offensive player, but with that starting lineup, if you take one of those guys off the floor and throw Derrick Jones Jr. in there or Troy Brown Jr. in there, that's still a really versatile lineup that has some defensive flexibility, not even to mention the Alex Caruso signing, which I thought $10 million for Alex Caruso was awesome. I'm surprised that the Lakers let him go, but then you see it come to fruition and man, that is just, that's just some extreme versatility with the Bulls on both ends of the floor. That is just, it's so encouraging looking forward, hoping that LaVine stays put.
Yeah. So right off the bat, the starting lineup, you're going to have Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Patrick Williams, who is back and healthy and is going to be in the opening day lineup, which is great to see. We were kind of unsure with that ankle injury he had, but I'm glad that he's back. And then Nikola Vucevic starting at the five. And then judging off the final preseason game and kind of the things that I've been reading from Bulls camp, it sounds like it's going to be just a 9-man unit to start this season. And it looks like that Derrick Jones Jr. is going to be left out of that rotation.
Which isn't too much of a surprise. I was really looking forward to seeing what Derrick Jones Jr. would do with Patrick Williams out. But obviously, if you can have Patrick Williams instead, you'd just rather have that for every game of the season if possible. But another guy that is not going to be in the rotation right now because he is still injured is Coby White. What do you think the ramifications of that are going to be? Do you think that pushes it to a 10-man rotation, or does Coby White take somebody else's spot in the group?
We'll see how things go early on. Coby is not expected to be back. His original timeline was mid to late November. We haven't gotten an update on that yet, but that's kind of the timeline that we all expect. If we can get him back by December, I think that'll be a nice boost at that time. But we'll see how things go to start. He definitely could push a guy like Javonte Green, who it looks like is going to be in that rotation to start. They could definitely push him out, but it just depends on how things are rolling. If the Bulls start out hot, if they're looking good, then you know maybe Coby White doesn't come in and take somebody's spot. Maybe he's just more of a spot player, and maybe they do run a 10-man rotation.
We talked about it after we reacted to all of the offseason moves about the Bulls, and we said that Coby White was one of the biggest losers for any young player this year, because he went from like darn near starting half the time. Like Satoransky was out there, you know, you had some other options, but then you bring in Lonzo, Caruso, and DeRozan, who all score and play like kind of similar positions. DeRozan not as much, but they just don't need him to do what he's best at as more of a combo scoring guard. And so even when he does come back, if he comes back slow, I can see him not being in the rotation nearly as much.
It's very possible. Last year, he got 31 minutes a game. I don't see him even getting close to 28 minutes a game. I think he'll struggle to even get close to 28 minutes. And that's just because of what he does. It just doesn't match up with what we need, especially at the guard position. I'd much rather have a player like Caruso in there alongside our stars than a guy like Coby White. Now, you can say that he can definitely run the second unit and be a scorer off the bench for the second unit, but I just don't see this team even needing that, honestly, because no. I really feel like either LaVine or DeRozan is going to be in there at all times. You're going to have a playmaker in there at all times. So Coby could be a complement to that, but he's not exactly somebody that we have to have in there. And that's concerning for his dynasty outlook, at least for the next couple of years. Now he's heading into year three. He'll be on the Bulls for another year after that, I'm assuming, but it is hard to envision the Bulls keeping him and giving him money towards the future, depending upon how this team looks, of course, but it just seems like he's kind of going to be the odd man out moving forward.
Which is a bummer because he looked like he had tons of opportunity. I'm sure people may have been buying into him in dynasty leagues, but the Bulls should always have two of Lonzo, LaVine, DeRozan, and Vooch on the court at all times. And so then you really just need defense around that. Yeah. Coby White has some shooting and Lonzo can play off ball, so there's some opportunity there, but who knows? I think that's our surprising player in a negative way, because Coby White could end up not being really in the rotation nearly as much. Do we have a surprising player in a good way?
Man, I really love Alex Caruso. I know we've mentioned him when we did our fantasy awards as somebody, you had him as your sixth man of the year.
Sure did.
I just love where you can get him in drafts, what it'll take to acquire him in a trade. I think he's definitely just going to outplay whatever value you have to give up to get him. If you need assists, steals, he's going to throw in threes as well. And the biggest thing is he's going to get opportunity. We've seen it already in preseason. Everything that I've seen from the news and Bulls camp is just positive reviews from him. Out of all the players that we've acquired, the most positive news has been from Alex Caruso and what he can do for this team. So he's going to get minutes off the bench. And I love what he's going to be able to bring to your fantasy team. Now, is he going to be a league winner? No, but he's going to be able to help you quite a bit for somebody that's so cheap to acquire.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
That's exactly right. It's mostly just about the value with a guy like Caruso, and that's why I had him as my sixth man of the year. But looking at the preseason, if you want to try to take something from it, he got 26 minutes, 26 minutes, 22 minutes, and 20 minutes. I would not be surprised to see him in at that 26-minute mark, like very, very consistently, because that guard defense is going to be very important for that team with Vooch back there and with DeRozan on the floor often. And LaVine did pick it up a little bit, but he's still got to prove it a little bit this season. So those are two very, very good choices for surprising players. Let's talk about some young guys. Our boy, Patrick Williams. Now, I love this guy, and I think we were both shocked when they went for him at 4. But what do you see from Pat Will moving forward, and what is it about him that has him so high in our dynasty rankings?
Well, the first thing is just the eye test. I mean, you just look at this guy, and he's just an athletic freak. That's why he was taken at number 4, is he's so big. He's got so much ability, but he just hasn't put it all together yet. And that's coming. He did play in the summer league this year, which I was glad to see. He looked like he did not belong in the summer league, but it did allow him to work on his game a little bit, especially on the offensive end, which is what he needed most. And he did improve. He looked a little bit better as a playmaker. His ball handling had tremendously improved. And he looked pretty good last year with his jump shot, and that looked a little bit better too, just a little bit more fluid and a little more confidence in it. And that's going to be huge because he will need to be able to make more than 0.8 threes per game that he did last year.
It's kind of a bummer to see the Bulls get so many players, because I wanted to see what he would do this year on a team that was going to be bad like the Bulls were going to be, where it was just LaVine and Coby White. But obviously you'll take the better team if it even means squandering guys like Pat Will and Coby White, who we already talked about a little bit. But two other guys, Derek Jones Jr., you said is probably not going to be in the rotation. What do you think about Troy Brown, who is at the moment currently extension eligible for like another 24 hours? Is he somebody that should be playing on this Bulls team?
He will play. Yeah, he absolutely will play, and that's because of his versatility, his ability to handle the ball, as well as just his athleticism and the ability to play defense. And obviously, that's kind of a continual theme with all of these rotation players, is they're athletic and they have the ability on the defensive end to help. And that's really what the Bulls need. When you have guys like LaVine, Vooch, DeRozan, you have to have athleticism on the defensive end to make up for those deficiencies. And Troy Brown Jr. absolutely has that. I know a lot of people have been high on him, especially going back to his Washington days when he was pretty much playing de facto point guard there and whatnot, but he won't have that role with the Bulls, but he is still young. He's only 22. He was a mid first round pick. And I know teams still look at that when they're evaluating players. I don't know if he's going to get the extension with the Bulls, but he will be in the rotation early on, so somebody to definitely keep an eye on.
I would not be shocked if he went into restricted free agency and did not get an extension. It just seems like the Bulls have so much money tied up already that you kind of just roll the dice and see if somebody matches him and then figure it out from there. Another couple guys very, very small. Alize Johnson, and then your second round pick, Ayo, who I really liked coming out of the draft. Are either of these two worth flyers in, say, our 30-team league? I know they're both rostered in our 30-team league, but are they going to be worth it outside of, obviously, injuries?
So we'll start with Alize Johnson. He will not be in the rotation to start, but there's a reason that the Bulls kept him on the roster. He did make the roster, which is first and foremost the biggest deal. He was kind of one of those guys that was on the border of if he was going to make the team or not. He did make the team. Now he will need a little bit of help in order to get playing time. But we've seen it, you know, Pat Will went down early. So you just really never know as far as injuries go. Those are going to happen throughout the season. But the nice part about him is he doesn't need a lot of minutes to be useful. He's a rebounding machine when he's on the court.
Absolute animal.
So that's kind of the nice part with him is he just needs to find a way to get 15 to 18 minutes. And it's possible with an injury. He's going to be the next man up there. And the Bulls, if you look at their front court depth, it's very, very lacking. I mean, that's the spot where we really don't have much depth whatsoever. And that's why Pat Will's injury was such a big deal. So it'll only take one or two guys to get banged up and boom, he's in there playing 15 to 20 minutes and he's useful for you.
For sure. I love Alize, former Pacer. Just a guy who goes out there and plays so incredibly hard and is, I swear, 6 inches taller than the 6'6" that he's usually listed as. But last guy, Ayo. If Kobe White isn't getting minutes, then Ayo isn't getting minutes. It's really that simple.
Yeah, look for him to be on the G League team to start the season. I was thrilled with this pick. I know all Chicago Bulls fans were absolutely thrilled to get Dansumu. He's a local dude, and he was a projected. I was seeing him late first round in most NBA mock drafts that I was looking at. So it was just a really good fit and a guy that works really hard, plays good defense, but he does need to work a little bit on his offensive game. And they just don't really need him right now. So expect for him to be in the G League, but just somebody to keep an eye on if you have a G League spot or a minor league spot or what have you. Definitely somebody worth putting on there and kind of stashing away, but nobody that's going to be useful this year.
For sure. Well, Travis, thanks for joining me to talk about the Chicago Bulls, and we will be right back to talk about the Utah Jazz. So we are talking about the Utah Jazz, and I could not be happier to be joined by McCabe Pearson, who is a big Jazz fan or hater. I don't know which one you want to say about that. Depends on who you ask, I guess. McCabe, how are you doing today?
We're good. By the time we're done recording this podcast, we'll be under 50 hours until the regular season starts. So we're ramped up, ready to go.
Yeah, but who's counting?
Not me at all. I have a math degree, so I don't deal with numbers too much.
Let's talk about the rotation that the Jazz are hopeful can win a championship, because they certainly don't have a lot of young players to be looking forward to, and they didn't make a bunch of moves this offseason. So what is that rotation going to look like, and how is that going to impact some fantasy output?
So Quinn Snyder is very, very strict on a 9-man rotation, and that will never change under Quinn Snyder. So you have your starting five. He usually been utilizing Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert in three stints instead of two. It's probably the number one reason the Jazz were so good last year. Conley and Gobert went in three stints per half instead of two, and then they'll trickle in a couple of bench guys. The other weird thing Quinn does with his rotation that listeners need to know is it's not a very traditional who's the backup point guard, who's the third string point guard. It's more two groupings, and so it doesn't matter if it's Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, or Jordan Clarkson that gets hurt. It's going to be Jared Butler. Joe Ingles gets hurt, still Jared Butler. If anyone gets hurt, Jared Butler is going to be the guy that steps in. If it's a bigger guy, Rudy Gay might miss the first couple weeks of the regular season. Then you might be getting Eric Pascal. And if Rudy Gobert gets hurt, then it just doesn't even matter the Jazz. So we haven't thought about what happens there. But yeah, you know, if Hassan Whiteside gets hurt, it's probably Eric Pascal stepping in and playing some small ball five, him and Rudy Gay. So it's very linear of having a 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th guy, not a third string point guard and a third string power forward and whatnot. They are lined up like it's elementary school heading to lunch.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to see though. When you have a team, I mean, they finished first place last year in the West. That's, you know, it makes sense that they have their lineups in check and they're going to have the run out the same rotation that last year, like Rhett mentioned, they didn't really add anybody new. But a couple guys I do want to talk about, because they have a really good bench, and that sometimes can get overlooked when guys don't start, when guys aren't getting 30 minutes a game. But what do you see Jordan Clarkson doing this year. He's sixth man of the year. Do you see him doing something similar to what he did last year? And is he able to keep up the same production?
Yeah, so it's really interesting and weird with Jordan Clarkson. Jazz fans love him. They think the Clarkson for Exum trade was the best trade in franchise history, which we can sit here and debate for half an hour if you would like. I'm assuming
we did it. We've already done it. Yeah.
Good. But Clarkson will do what he did last year. And last year, the first 6 weeks of the season, he was absolutely amazing and he looked phenomenal. And then the last 3 months of the season, he was awful. And then he was bad in the playoffs. And you see these quarters here or there. And in short, you just know what you're getting from Jordan Clarkson. Look at his career, ignore the first 6 weeks of last year, and you know what you're getting from Jordan Clarkson. Quinn has a tendency to have very strong opinions about players, and extends and shortens leashes based on that. And he loves Jordan Clarkson. So there's not really a world in which Clarkson gets benched, even if he's shooting 2 for 20 every night, which is what it feels like sometimes. So I wouldn't worry about that by any means. I know some Jazz like maybe Jared Butler could push, you know, Jordan Clarkson aside a little bit, and that will not happen unless Clarkson gets traded. And if he gets traded from fantasy perspective, that means he's keeping his value to whatever new team he's getting traded to.
So Jordan Clarkson will not be surprising this year because he's going to be staying the same, unless you expect him to regress a little bit, which you could, then you could be pleasantly surprised if he maintains.
As I said, if you look at his numbers from February 1st to the end of the year, he's not going to regress to that. That's what he is. That's what he's been his whole career.
So is there a player that could be surprising either in a good way or a bad way? Somebody that might have had a down year that'll step up this year, or who was doing too much last year and is likely to regress?
People are really worried about Joe Ingles around here. There's this weird narrative that he wasn't good in the playoffs despite his 70 true shooting percentage in the playoffs, just like the regular season. Like, he's just really solid, but the eye test wasn't there for a lot of people. So there's some rumors that, especially as Rudy Gay misses the first couple weeks of the season, is looking more and more likely that Joe Ingles will stop playing a lot of point guard and move a lot more to power forward, which is, you know, that's a big jump, right, from the one to the four. But there could be some regression there in terms of assists and playmaking from Joe Ingles. Obviously, his shooting numbers are never going to drop. He's always going to be an elite shooter. The Jazz last year were the number one team in getting shots up in the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. Joe Ingles is the number one shooter in the entire NBA in the first 7 seconds of a shot clock. And so I'd expect that to continue. And as long as Joe's pulling them up from wherever, left and right, you're still going to get that same efficiency value and still that kind of all around value. You know, he's man steals and man blocks, and he just kind of does everything at an okay enough level. But there could be some regression there in terms of assists. And with that comes turnovers. And then again, we could be sitting here a month in the season and Mike Conley has a hamstring issue for the 15th time in
only 15
years. Something like I've lost count. And then, you know, maybe the Jazz panic and put Joe Ingles back into that role. But that, at least right now, is a possibility that Ingles does lose some ball handling privileges.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And I actually picked up Ingles in our 12-team league as a guy that I thought could help me. So in assists and maybe pick up a few steals and threes as well. So hopefully he does still maintain a role. Another guy I want to talk about is Rudy Gay. And that's because he's just a new face to a team that is much of the same compared to last year. I know he's injured right now to start this season, but is he somebody that can potentially take the starting spot of Royce O'Neal, or is he just going to be a player off the bench looking at 20 minutes?
He won't start at any point of the year, but it will be interesting to see where his minute goes. I talked about why the Jazz were so good last year, and it's the Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, three stints per half thing. And with that, George Niang, he had his struggles and had his benefits. And one of the things that really made him one of the best players relative to public perception last year was he played all of his minutes next to Rudy Gobert. I think it was something crazy, like 98.7% of his minutes next to Rudy Gobert. And with that, the Jazz had a plus 17 net rating with those lineups. We called it our death lineup because it was Conley and Gobert and our bench against opposing benches. And, you know, that's the end of it, right? But with Niang gone, Rudy Gay doesn't fit that Niang mold. So I'm very concerned. My biggest personal concern with the Jazz this year is you can't just take Rudy Gay, who's this inefficient shot creator, and drop him in Niang, who's this lights out shooter from three, this 42% shooter over the last 3 years, this, you know, relatively decent playmaker on a weird level. Niang was like the only guy on our team who would actually look to pass to Rudy Gobert. So that's kind of weird. And so it's really going to be really interesting to see how the Jazz shake up the rotation, because it's not just as simple as drop Rudy Gay into George Niang. Gay's, I think, really there to solve the Mitchell Clarkson minutes. In the middle of all four quarters, we have Mitchell Clarkson minutes, and those are a disaster defensively, just abysmal. And people blame Tony Bradley, and people blame Derek Favors, and people are going to blame Hassan Whiteside.
But that might actually be reasonable.
Those guys just aren't Rudy Gobert. It's like, yeah, Derek Favors isn't good at defense. It's like, no, he's not a top five defender of all time. Like, what are we doing here? It's going to happen again this year. Whiteside won't be great by any means, but the Jazz will struggle in the non-Rudy minutes. People will blame it on the backup center minutes, and it will be because Donovan Mitchell and Jordan Clarkson both can't play defense. And so Rudy Gay theoretically might slide into that lineup as kind of a weak side defender in a Robert Covington role a little bit. And then that might drop Boyan to be a third player who plays three stints, and maybe Boyan plays three stints with Mike and Rudy. And so really seeing how the rotation shakes out is a huge thing right now for Jazz fans, and how you get Rudy Gay in a situation where he can be effective.
Yeah, absolutely. So now moving on to the young players. And I use that term loosely because we talked about it. Donovan Mitchell is not technically a young player, even though he is about 25 years old. So in the grand scheme of things, he is young, but he's on a max contract, like you said. So what young players on this team should we be looking out for from a dynasty perspective? Some stashes, maybe. I know Jared Butler has shown some really good things. Is there anybody else or something about Jared Butler that we need to know for the long term?
I mean, I think people are hoping Eric Pascal finds something to go from 41st pick to all rookie first team to trade it for a top 42 protected second pick in like 10 months is ridiculous. And so I think people are hoping there. He's the 10th guy if a big gets hurt, as I said. I wouldn't expect him to get minutes early. Elijah Hughes looks okay. I think he's going to pass Mione in the rotation. Mione's on a non-guaranteed deal, so I think he actually might not even make it through the January 7th guaranteed date or trade deadline. But I wouldn't expect anything from Elijah Hughes this year. It's really all about Jared Butler, at least at the rookie level and dynasty level. Jared Butler should put some minor pressure on the Jazz to trade Jordan Clarkson. He should put some minor pressure on the Jazz to look to trade Mike Conley within the next two seasons. And I think there's hope that Jared Butler could progress either into a six-man heavy minutes bench guy or maybe even a starter next to Donovan Mitchell long term. He led all rookies in points per game in the preseason, which Jazz fans have tweeted at me like 500 times, it feels like. And you know, has some really good playmaking and all that fun stuff. An okay defender. People have been joking about a three-guard lineup with Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, and Jared Butler at some point, but I don't think that would work. And so maybe they do try it, but I think it fails and it doesn't matter at all. But Jared Butler is the sole name to look at from a young player's perspective because the Jazz are quietly as old as the Lakers this year. You know, you go from George Niang to Rudy Gay, that's an extra 8 years on your roster. You go from Derek Favors to Hassan Whiteside, that's an extra 2 years on your roster. And we brought back the other seven who are just a year older. So outside of Donovan Mitchell, everyone's pretty much at 30 or older.
And I love Jared Butler. So I'm a Baylor guy. Watched him last year pretty much every game, and that backcourt was just ferocious, and Butler was a big part of that. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. He may not be flashy, but he's definitely a guy that's going to help you on the defensive end and get the job done on the offensive end as well. One guy I do want to bring up because he has a top 10 finish, and that's Hassan Whiteside. I know Rhett was over there itching to talk about him just a little bit, so I'm going to throw him out there. I know you got Rudy Gobert, all-world defender, but is there going to be 15 minutes for Hassan this year?
That's up to Hassan. we'll figure that out. Yeah, I'm not too worried about, I think the whole versatility, small ball five, Rudy Gay or Pascal thing is way overblown, both in the regular season and the playoffs. I'd expect, the thing with Whiteside is if he is on the Jazz roster, he'll be playing 15 minutes a night. But if you were to tell me right now that he's not on the roster come the trade deadline or come December 15th or come 3 weeks from now, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, he's on a minimum contract. The Jazz could cut him tomorrow with pretty much nothing other than the minimum cap hit penalty. We saw him do it with Jeff Green 2 years ago. You know, we're sitting there on Christmas Eve and all of a sudden Jeff Green is just like not on the Jazz anymore. And so you could see that with Hassan Whiteside. But if he's on the roster, he'll be playing 15 minutes. And so you won't have to worry about that from a fantasy perspective of, is this guy going to get minutes tonight? Where's he at? Like, he's either getting 15 minutes or he's on a beach retired. So
which, that's a block.
That is two blocks.
that's awesome. I know last year that was kind of the issue with owning him. And yeah. I know he's not a huge part of most teams, but if you're in a punt where you're counting on blocks, you need him playing in games, whether it's 12, 15 minutes, that's fine. Last year was an issue where he would just not play.
I will throw out, as Jazz fans, we are hoping and praying he blocks less and less and less shots every day. Because there's a reason he blocks more shots than Rudy Gobert. And it's because Rudy is really good at staying on his feet and not chasing blocks. And Hassan chases them like crazy and lets up offensive rebounds because of it. And it's not a good thing that he blocks so many shots. So we are hoping that Rudy Gobert and Quinn Snyder can sit him down and get him to block less shots this year. As backwards as that sounds, it is a thing we are hoping for.
That is not a thing I'm hoping for.
In practice,
sorry, but
in practice, we'll see what happens.
There you go. Yeah, I wouldn't be upset if Hassan just blocked like 2.4 shots a game. That'd be reasonable. And especially for you super deep leagues, like, that's worth a pickup. Like, if he's getting 15 minutes a game, he's going to be worth a pickup. He might be tanking the Jazz from inside, but he's going to be good for your fantasy team. So
I was going to say, I'll throw one more thing out. Heaven forbid, my worst nightmare, something happens to Rudy Gobert. But Hassan Whiteside playing 30 minutes a night, we owe our first round pick to the Grizzlies this year because the Mike Conley trade, and it's top six protected. So if Rudy goes down with a season ending injury early, Hassan Whiteside playing 30 minutes tonight would be a great path to keeping our draft pick this year.
And that's kind of been the thing that's been Travis's point this whole time. It's like, you know, it's a guy that you kind of want to have just on the off chance.
For what you're going to pay to get him, it's a chance. I mean, like we said, he had a top 10 year. I'm not saying he can do that again, but man, even 20 minutes.
You see it all the time in fantasy football with running backs, where if you go out and get an Ezekiel Elliott, you make sure you get Tony Pollard. So when Zeke gets hurt, you still have a top 10 running back. Kind of similar idea. If you get Rudy Gobert on your team, you should probably really think about getting Hassan Whiteside late in your draft, because that he will have really good value if something does happen to Rudy.
And by late, we mean like really late. Like, don't, this is not late 12 team, like in the 150s. This is late in like the 200s and beyond the 300s. So
yes,
McCade, we really, really appreciate you coming on and bringing some serious Jazz insight. Where can people find you? What are you working on? And what should we be looking for from you?
So you can find me on Twitter at McCadeP8. It's McCadeP8. I'm a really big cap nerd. So if anybody has any salary cap questions or any capologist questions like that, I've spent hundreds of hours researching the NBA salary cap and that stuff. So feel free to come ask me cap questions. I do run the 30-team fantasy basketball league where we follow the NBA's collective bargaining agreement as much as possible. And we're always having not a ton, but enough people jump in and out of that. So if anybody's interested in that league, it is a ton of fun. It will anger you because we do a free agency. And so it sucks when you flip a coin and lose Anthony Davis for the next 5 years because the coin flip landed on tails instead of heads. But that's part of the fun of it, right? Is following the real NBA, because I'm sure, and as a Jazz fan, I had that happen with Gordon Hayward, right? So I get that anger, and that's a healthy, realistic anger. But yep, come check it out. I have a podcast. We just rebranded to Gen Z Jazz Basketball at the Gen Z Podcast Network, so you can check that out. And yeah, just give me a follow on Twitter. I'm always there getting hate from Jazz fans and throwing out things that come true 3 months later, which Jazz fans hate even more at that point.
Right, exactly. Yeah, don't hate me because I'm right. Anyways, thank you everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate your time, and as always, we will see you again next time.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.